is such a privilege and such a needed call. And we thank you for Pastor Peter. And just we ask that you'd bless these words to our heart in this exchange, and also the weekend to follow. Tomorrow we have soul winning, it's Saturday, and we also soul catching. And we also have the privilege of a Christmas party. And it is actually Greater Grace World Outreach Fast and Prayer Day. So tomorrow you have to give up just one thing that you usually do, because we're not going to fast at a Christmas party. That's sacrilegious. We're going to eat, right? You're bringing food. Is there food at a Christmas party?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So like, give up, we can give up something. Like, maybe give up one more hour on your pillow Saturday morning and get up a little early. No, I'm just kidding. As you're led of the Spirit.
So,
give up smoking.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I can fast at night.
Fast at night. Yeah, that's a whole other subject. So let's go to James chapter 1. James 1. Okay, James chapter 1. Thank you in Jesus' name. Bless this local church amazingly. Being steadfast and immovable, always abounding in the finished work of God. Okay, James 1. I am reading from this man from England. This is my favorite translation of the Bible up to date now, which is J.B. Phillips. The English is wonderful. Whether it loses something in the translation of Swedish, I don't know if he has one in Swedish, if it's translated. But he only has translated the New Testament. But it's you'll hear it, and maybe it will make sense. But James chapter 1, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, sends greetings to the 12 displaced tribes. The Christian can even welcome trouble when all kinds of trials and temptations crowd into your lives, my brother. Don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends. That's pretty interesting, huh? Realize that they come to test your faith and to produce in you the quality of endurance. I like that. So realize that the trial or the test comes to test your faith and produce in you the quality of endurance. Whew. What does the English say in that? I don't know. Mm. What is your holy
name? Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience.
Mm. Patience. So he's saying that produces patience, hypomeno, but it's here, it's the quality of endurance. That is patience, isn't it? The quality of that. Those are good words. And then he says this, next verse, but let the process go on until that endurance is fully developed. And the patience is fully developed. And you will find you have become men and women of mature character. I like this. You have become mature, and you will have the right sort of independence. Now, that's we'll leave it right there. The right sort of independence. And if, in the process, any of you does not know how to meet any particular problem, he has only to ask God, who gives generously to all men without making them feel foolish or guilty, and he may be quite sure that the necessary wisdom will be given him. Isn't that good? Mm-hmm. This is it's tremendous. A couple things we can say about it, and I'll read a few. I thought of these things. One other verse. Peter, would you read Hebrews 2:18?
Yes.
I don't know what it says in here, but read it in that version.
2:18. For in that he himself has suffered being tempted, he's able to aid those who are being tempted.
Hmm. He's able to help those
who are tempted.
Okay, so in his, he said, for by virtue of his own suffering under temptation, he's talking about Jesus, so by virtue of his own suffering under temptation, he is able to help those who are exposed to temptation. Like you were exposed to Chernobyl, the dust. You don't know. But he was suffering under temptation. So I had these thoughts today. I was writing them down in between listening to Pastor Peter type on the computer and passing out and gaining and writing and reading and gleaning some thoughts and remembering some things about temptation. There is no place that you and I can go where we will not be tempted. There's no place you can go where you won't be tempted. Okay? In the new life as we follow Jesus Christ, there's some difficulty. In this world, we have difficulty, tribulation, right? And our loyalty has to be tested. It's got to be. If it's not, we say, in English, we say, life is not a walk in the park. Although it is, you know, it is. You know, that means a walk in the park is a slogan we use for easy, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you have that in Swedish? Yeah. What?
Dance and roses.
Guns and Roses? Do you still listen to that?
Bad drama.
Life is a dance and roses.
Oh, life is like a dance and roses. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's not a walk in the park. It's like everything is tiptoe through the tulips. You know. You know. It's not like that. It's like it's a lot more difficult in one sense, and we must weather temptations in our faith. In our faith, and don't resist them, like he says, as intruders, but welcome them as friends. Now, sometimes they come unaware, and we'll talk about that a little. We'll talk about, like, in Jesus' whole life, from the time he came public, he was tempted of the devil. The devil was with him all the time, tempting him. I think I saw a verse somewhere that I wrote it down, that he was like, read Luke 4:13. The devil only left Jesus for a season, but he tempted him all the time. Because this verse, Luke 4:13. So, if see what does it say? That's a verse. Luke 4:13.
Now, when the devil had ended every temptation, he departed from him until an opportune time.
Ah! There goes another. Yeah, opportune time. Another time. For a season. So, he ended that one. And he departed and waited. And actually, the devil returned to Jesus over and over and over again. And actually, he was at the cross, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. Remember the Mel Gibson movie? I saw him at the cross. Mm-hmm. Did you like that movie, the Mel Gibson? Did you see that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I thought, yeah.
Huh?
I
didn't like the Temptation of Christ? I thought it was very, yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good portrayal. Yeah. A little bit too Catholic for me in some areas, but I think Gibson did a good job on it.
Is that a different movie to this?
The Passion of the Christ.
The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this is another one.
No, that's the Passion of Christ. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, this idea: what is temptation? Where does it come from? So, a couple things we teach people in our ministry: that God's testing is different than the devil's tempting. Though the Greek words are the same, and you know, testing and tempting are similar. And the King James boys had a field day. You know, we like maybe they understood it, maybe they didn't. And I thought of a couple of the Greek to tempt means to test. So they're similar. They're exactly the same. And even though God allows the devil to tempt us to evil, He overrules the temptation as a test for our own good. God overrules the temptation as a test for our own good. And you could think of a zillion biblical examples. It's important that we see that, because the test is coming from God. Even subtly, like David was tempted by the devil. He went up on the top of the roof. Right? Where's that? 2 Samuel 17 or 18. He went up on the top of the roof and he saw Bathsheba. It was over for him right there. I mean, he succumbed. But ultimately, God used it in the sense of bringing David to a place where he understood the character of God in a deeper way. And we use it today as a great example of a man who understood the heart of God. And he failed. But he knew where to go when he failed. It took him a year, though. But God was okay with him during that year. He was patient, you know. And he learned, like he says here in James, about he learned he learned to become a man of mature character with the right sort of independence. What is the right sort of independence? What is the right sort of independence, as you think of it in your life? The right sort of independence would be like this. Study to show yourself approved, a workman who needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Right? 2 Timothy 3:16. What's verse 17 say? Verse 17, 2 Timothy 3:17. You could be my reader because you have good diction. You're good. You have good voice control of the scriptures when you read it. It's a gift from God. For a Hungarian who used to just love only goulash. Now you love Jesus and your wife. Hasn't he done great things? Your mother's goulash is to die for. I know. And your wife can never make it like that. Sorry, I told my wife a long time ago, she can never make chicken soup like my mother. It's the Freudian thing, and guys, they have to live like that, so wives have to deal with it. That's another marriage seminar. Okay.
What is it there?
2 Timothy 3:17.
That the man of God may be complete. Is it?
Yeah.
Thoroughly equipped for every good work.
And? That's it?
That's it, yes.
Okay, so he may be entire, perfect, and the Greek says wanting nothing. Wanting nothing is what Phillips is saying here. Fully developed men who are mature have the right sort of independence. I want nothing. I am independent. Independence not like I'm on my own. Nobody can tell me what to do or tell me how to live. I won't, you know, I have I'm alone. I don't need the body. Not that type of independence. Not promoting myself, but really wanting nothing. That's real independence. When you're delivered from the strivings of men, you're delivered from the lust of recognition, you're delivered from these things that you would seek without having the trial of your faith. Like God's going to, you know, that's part of one of the badges of honor of a believer, that you can be tempted or tried and come out in this place. Even if you fail miserably, ultimately God's going to use it to promote his life in you and through you, and you develop an independence. That independence means that I am in Christ and dependent on him and him only. I just made that up, but it sounds good. You know? Okay? So, as we think about this, you're supposed to endure hardness as a soldier of Christ. That's not a weird thing that Jesus, Paul said to Timothy, I think 2 Timothy 2:3, enduring hardness as a soldier. That's who we are. In our job description, or in our calling, or in our saved life, God not only makes us able ministers, but he also calls us to be cross bearers and armor bearers and soldiers. You know, we're presenting our bodies as living sacrifices. That in Hebrew, in English, is an oxymoron, a living sacrifice, alive but dead. There's hardship in that. There's a struggle that I think about when it comes to trying to stay alive though I'm dead. And then also to be, he's put us in warfare. You know, putting on the whole armor of God. So that's fun and that's interesting. So I wrote this down today, the difference between temptation and the temptation of the devil and the trial or the testing of God. Temptation is when the adversary, the devil, attacks you to try to get you to do evil. Okay? But God would take that same, even the same event as a temptation, and he would send it as a trial from himself, who could take the wiles of the devil and ultimately prove his own divine purpose in our lives. That really pisses off the devil, you know? That you could have courage in the midst of an evil situation. You could take the premise of temptation, you know, and say, you know what? It is connected to the whole problem of evil in the universe, isn't it? Why do people suffer? Why, like we're talking about men who are cancerous and they go home at 58 years of age. I mean, why do good people, you know, the big question, why do good people die young? You know, what's going on? You know, why do the evil people live long? The premise of temptation itself is connected to this bigger picture, though you don't have to answer it every time you have a test or a trial. But it's nice to imagine those things in a sanctified understanding that in our Christian life, this is a conflict. This is what this ministry has taught in Hosea 3:1, that God has a controversy with us. He has a quarrel, a trial with us. You know, reeb in the Hebrew. And that is, this controversy he has is he's allowing us to be on display before the angels who are warring against the demons. Have you considered my servant Job? And in Job 1. Or in Zechariah, Joshua, the high priest, was standing before God with filthy garments on. You remember that? Those are things that this ministry, I never heard those taught anywhere else but through pastor's pulpit. No one ever taught that. I haven't heard it to this day, being a Christian for 32 years, never heard it. But I'm so thankful that we see this angelic conflict, this struggle between good and evil, between right and wrong. You know, it transcends just moral life, because it's possible to be a good moral person and live a okay life and live joyfully with the wife of your youth all your years and die and go to hell, right? But God, he gives us, sons and daughters, the privilege of proving our loyalty. I want to prove you. I want, you know, and that's a good English word the King James always used, to prove, you know, like, to polish you, to heat up the water and see what comes to the top, to heat up the gold, see, to get the dross off the top. And there is no virtue in instant goodness in any life. Let me say it again. There's no virtue, there's no real outflowing of the nature and character of God instantly, outside of instantly receiving him as Savior, but we don't understand that. Like, who touched me? Jesus said. The woman just touched his tzitzit, his fringe on the bottom of his garment. Virtue has gone out of me. And in the moment, her life was changed. But this was a process, and as she left, she left. What the doctors couldn't do, what the pastors couldn't do, Jesus did in a moment for her. But this became a lifestyle of serving God, loving God, learning of God, I'm sure it was. And the prize of a temptation or a trial, the prize of your Christian life is a sterling character. I'm using a lot of British English for the Brit present, because we love the UK. I mean, isn't it cool that sterling character is one of the prizes? Like, you can, when you stand before God and he says, you were just like me, ye are gods, right? He said that. It doesn't mean that I am Jesus Christ, but it does mean that I am just like Jesus Christ. As he is, so are you and I in this present evil world. And so I like to, like, do you know people who just really have the character of God? And you can see that clearly through, they have won the allegiance of Captain Jesus. They have, they're looking forward in their life, being motivated to hear that, well done, thou good and faithful servant. I think I like to hear that. I want to hear that. I want God to just, I think that would be the most glorious time in your life. To enter into the joy of the Lord. I wrote this down by D.L. Moody. He said this about joy. He said this, God, Jesus gives you joy no man can take from you. He said, I have joy the world cannot rob me of, a treasure the world cannot take from me. I have something that is not in the power of the devil or in the power of man to deprive me of. D.L. Moody. I like that. You know, that you have that joy in, what a joy that is. The joy of the Lord is being our strength. So that was like things about temptation that I thought of. And then a fallen man with an old sin nature in a sinful world, and we face it, and we have a moment of honesty with ourselves saying, okay, God, I'm saved now, so now what? And God says, there's a trial of your faith, and don't confuse temptation with sin, because temptation is not sin. Okay? Temptation is not sin. What's Hebrews 4:15 say? Did we read that? Because it cannot be sin because of this verse. Remember this, it's important.
4:15.
Yeah.
For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin.
Huh. So can temptation be sin? No. It says it. Temptation cannot be sin. And the greatest men and women of God that I know who are aware and conscious of the greatness of God are always aware of the devil. I don't have to be occupied with the devil, but I'm aware of it. You know the difference between being occupied and being aware. I know he has a ministry. I know he's a roaring lion. I know he's an angel of light. I've studied the nature of God well enough to know that he has an adversary, that Jesus has a tempter that has been, that is factual, that this is an important equation, that the more godly we seek to be, the more conscious you shall become of the presence of the influence of the evil one. Have you ever, you know, you read Romans 7, you can see it right off in Paul's life. But the thing I want to do, I can't do. Mm-hmm. And the thing I don't want to do, I end up doing. Mm-hmm. But Paul had a desire that when I want to do this thing, there's the influence of evil around. And I think that's a good thing, that proves you're saved. Mm-hmm. I like that once in a while, if you ever doubted that you were saved because you act like such an ass, like that's donkey in the original. Mm-hmm. And you know, you act like such a jerk, like you know you've done something that even a morally good man wouldn't do. Did you ever do something that you know a good person wouldn't do? Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, like because of this whole idea of like, and the devil would just say, ha ha, look at him, give him to me, Lord, and I'll make sure he curses you, you know. And God says, you can have him, but you can't have his life. That belongs to me, power of life and death. And so, as you think about it, temptation will only become sin that the moment that the evil thought is entertained in my mind, it's dwelt upon, and I start to like it, and then I indulge in it. I succumb to it. That's James 1:13-14-15. Sin is conceived and it brings, you know, lust is conceived, it brings forth sin. Sin is conceived, it brings forth death. So when temptation becomes sin right here, and you can't, it's interesting. I heard one of the girls in my church say, Pastor, you know how I deal with it, with temptation and not having it become sin? She says, I can never prevent the bats from flying around my head, but I can prevent them from making a nest in my hair. I can stop them from making a nest in my hair. Because bats, most people flip out when they see bats in their house. We had bats in our house in the attic. Whew! You know, and you know what's so crazy? They're an endangered species in Massachusetts. And if you kill them and they find out about you, you get fined $500. So, but you know what I did? John and I went up with bats, baseball bats, and we started trying to smack them. But they're fast and they're small, and they can get into like that hole. you know, but they're ugly looking and they crap everywhere. But if you kill one, and so I had to call the exterminator, and they go up with a towel and they get them and they take them out and they bring them to the Humane Society because they're endangered species, and they're actually good around because they kill the spiders. They eat spiders and mosquitoes, but they're you see you know what they look like Count Dracula.
Where does that say in the Bible?
What?
You can't stop the bird from.
No, Jenny Perry said that. She's not. She's not.
I'm not from the Bible, Lily. We have discussed it. My mama. It works a lot. I don't know because I always tell the daughters, you know. She said, "Is it from the Bible?" I said, "I don't know."
Yeah. Oh, that's very good, Mama. So yeah. So we. I think the point. I think you could find verses that would allude to that.
Yeah. Okay.
I think this just is wisdom. You know,
Didn't Martin Luther say that?
Yeah, but he said birds.
He said some kind of birds.
Yeah.
Jenny said bats, and Jenny, I trust his more than Martin Luther. But I do like this. Martin Luther said every born again Christian has the self pope living in him. Did you ever hear him say that?
Self
pope, the old man. He calls him the self pope, the pope self. Right, I like that. That was pretty cool because that's the Pope, the self life, you know. So, a couple of other things I thought. as you learn how to resist the devil, he flees from you. How do you resist? You know, that word in the Greek, histamine, is a great word. Histamine. It's where we get that word antihistamine from, where you have this product that could prevent the cold. You take it, you know. And it means when you resist something, you like if you were felt a flu coming on or cold, you wouldn't just open the bottle of pills. You'd take as many as you needed to prevent the disease, correct? Mm-hmm. And the same with temptation. When you know you're being tempted, and in order to not succumb to resist the devil, you take the whole bottle of pills. You have an overdose on grace. You have an overdose on mercy. You have an overdose on love. You just let God love you out of, you know, and you think about for a moment, because it's important to be sensible about temptation and not overly emotional or underly thoughtful about it. But on the other hand, it's madness to pray, "Oh Lord, lead me not into temptation," and then click on the porno site. I know men who have done that. You know, "Oh Lord, please lead me not into temptation," as they're sitting in front of their computer and just clicking on, you know, porn. You say Christian men do that? Oh yeah. Is it a big problem? Oh yes. I'm just picking on this because it's a big issue in men's lives and people's lives, you know, all over the planet. It's like God, you know, the devil knows your weakness, your weak areas. Because he cannot read your mind, but for 6,782 years, he's been reading the countenance of men. He knows what he's doing. That's his business. He's a pro at it. He's the best in his field, in the whole world system. And he got David to go on the roof. When men were at battle, somehow he knew that David was going to rest that day. And he orchestrated that. But God overruled it. At the expense of what? Uriah's life, yeah, and the baby's life. But for the glory of God. Because God took Uriah and the baby right home. I'm sure Uriah was a saved man. You know. But so this trial of our faith is producing something in our lives, an independence that we could just say, "Oh Lord, where can I go? Except you go with me. Where I don't want to go anywhere, except you go with me. I'm not going to go unless your presence goes with me." That's independence. I'll go, but your presence is with me. If it ain't, I'm not going. So I like that. I'm up to 27, so I got a few more. Okay, so we said today it's good to realize your weaknesses, your weak points, your Achilles heel, you know, the place where you can. I know my weaknesses. I know my weak areas. I don't dwell on them. I know that I'm especially vulnerable in certain places. In certain places and certain people groups. Joseph ran from Potiphar's wife. He ran. You know, he ran. I don't know of a man who's not, I mean, I know of men who say they are not attracted by the body of a female. But when a body of a female goes by in an outfit that is revealing, I don't know of many men who turn the other way. It's a great habit to have. But I do know of men who know how to confess right away and don't let that temptation become sin. I mean, if that's the weakness of me, I've got worse problems than that. Honestly, you know, for me that's not a biggie, because I learned a long time ago from Pastor. I was in Iraq. The first time I met this ministry, I remember Pastor Stevens, that was 1978. The first time I came to this ministry, I came with some guys from Springfield. Pastor Stevens looked at about a dozen of us men. He said, "Never be alone with a woman." That's what he said. I said, "I'm out of here. What's this, some kind of homo church? I'm gone." That's what I said to myself. I am gone. What do you mean, never be alone with a woman? What I said to the guy next to me, who's no longer in the ministry. None of the guys are in the ministry except for me and Pastor Chabelli, of those 12 that were there. And I said, and he said, "Never be alone with a woman." So I let it. He said, "Let him finish." So he talked to me. When you're a leader, don't be alone in a room with a woman. Billy Graham told him that. You know, and he developed that doctrine for pastors. Yeah. For pastors. It works. It's very good. I was working as a chaplain in a prison in Connecticut, and the warden, who was a female, called me in her office, and she said, I left the door open. She said, "Close the door." I said, "No, ma'am. I leave the door open. Your secretary has to hear it. I won't be in the room alone with you." She said, "Okay, you're weird, but okay." I want to talk. You know. She said, "Tomorrow I'm going to a prison in New Jersey, and you have to come with me. I'll pay you for the day." I said, "Cool. We have to bring someone." She said, "We don't have a budget to bring anyone else." I said, "I'm not going alone with you." And I went home. She said, "If you don't go, I will write you up." You know, because they write you up and you get a dot for pay and everything else. So I went home, I prayed, I said, "Lord, I'm not going, and I don't want to be alone in this car with this woman all the way to New Jersey from Connecticut. It's 3 hours each way. I don't need it, I don't want it, I don't want it to have anything to do with it. I'm no hero, and she's beautiful, I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't care about that, I'm not going to do it, because I have a conviction about it. And if she orders me, I don't know what I'll do, I'll quit, I don't know. I don't want to quit, because it's a good job." So the next morning I go to work, and with the intention of just, I was going to call in sick, because I heard you could lie in warfare. I used that doctrine. I pulled out everything I could in my Jewish thinking to try to stop this from happening. And then I went, and she said, "Hey, I got an officer to go with us. He'll drive." I said, "Yes, Lord." Guess what? A month later, that woman and her husband started coming to our church. She said, I was a born again Christian. I didn't even want to tell you. And I kind of knew what you were hinting at. And she started coming to church. She went to Baltimore for 5 years in a row to convention. She had a blast. She's since moved out of the area with her husband. And she adopted a kid, and her daughter came to our school, got saved, a glorious thing. Not because of me, you know, like, but because of living by a principle that's in the multitude of counselors, your safety. There's wisdom, and the fear of man is a trap. Peter was afraid of men. He said, "I'll go with you to the end. I'll never deny you." And all of a sudden, the devil said, "I know I can get him right now. Watch." And then, you know, he gets tempted. Cock-a-doodle-doo! You know, in Caiaphas's garden. Were you there in Caiaphas's garden? Huh? In the garden of the rooster. Did you see that in Israel?
Yeah, absolutely.
That was one of my favorite spots. It's the original garden of Caiaphas's house, and they have a statue of a rooster in the corner, Peter's sake.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and leave it up to the Jews. Peter on the other side. Yeah, and leave it up to my brethren. They can make money doing anything, especially they get the tourists to pay to see the rooster garden. How do you pay to see that? Only a Jew could do that, Pastor. They can. Oh my God! And the Arabs are pretty, not too far behind either. They're brothers, you know. They can. But Peter's weak spot was the fear of men. A lot of believers live their lives with weaknesses. David said, "I am weak, but I am anointed." That's not an excuse. That's reality. I have a deacon who smokes cigarettes constantly. Filthy habit. I don't preach against it. He already knows. I can't preach against it because I love him. Pastor Stevens used to take, back in the earlier days, he would just let it rip. You know, he would insult homosexuality. He would yell at people who smoke a filthy, rotten cigarette. Who wants to kiss that mouth? From the pulpit, he would do that. But you know, that's, I mean, that was his style. And yeah. And you couldn't knock his success. He knew God. Like, you know, but smoking. And, you know, the story of Spurgeon, who smoked cigars up until one night in his pulpit in London, a Pentecostal minister from Seattle, Washington came and spoke a message on how smoking will take you to hell. And he didn't know that Spurgeon smoked cigars because he thought they were improving his health. Cigars back then were used as, you know, men thought that cigar smoking was good for your health.
Yeah.
And so Spurgeon never stopped until the next day his men said, "We see you stopped smoking. Why?" He said, they said, "You didn't believe that Pentecostal pastor." He said, "No, but just in case he might be right, I stopped." I like that. That just in case he might be right. It would be better to be cautious than throw your care to the wind and not be. That's temptation, you know. No temptation. It's common to all of us. And by the virtue of the suffering one, Jesus Christ, under temptation, he can take my tears and he can take my shame and he can nail it to the cross, my worst moments of failing miserably, and say there's no condemnation. And I'm delivered once and for all. You know. We grew up learning guilt, how to live and guilt other people, because Jewish mothers can guilt you. Like, my mother was a pro at teaching us how to guilt people. You know, you understand?
Yeah.
You know, like that was an acquired behavior pattern from a guilty conscience of a people that had to live that way because of persecution. You know, dirty Jew. I heard that every day of my life growing up. You're a dirty Jew. When I went to school, a dirty Jew.
Who would say
Christ
that?
Killed all the kids. Are you kidding? Bullying? It was back then. Bullying now kills kids. Bullying is a big problem. I'm sure in the schools here it's the same.
Yeah.
But, you know, kids are the cruelest thing to other kids. We heard that all the time. And because of that, I'm telling you the truth, in my life, because I feared rejection, I began to be a very good liar to try to protect myself and make myself get into certain places to feel accepted by people, because I know I was rejected as a Jew. And that was very difficult until one day God gave me Psalm 119:25, "Remove from me the way of lying and restore grace to me this moment I'm asking you to," in the original Hebrew. Instantly, just like that. Instantly. Remove from me the way of lying. Because homosexuals don't go to hell. Liars do. That scared the hell out of me. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah, I mean, you know, in the six sins that God hates, obviously, seven are an abomination to him. Your proud look, lying tongue. Two top ones. Forget the rest of them. You don't even have to figure out any. You know, drinking isn't in there. Homosexuality isn't in there. Smoking isn't in that list. Though they all derive from the same source, they're lesser gifts of the old nature of man. They're not the greater gifts of that the old man brings to the equation, to the table. So, that I think is, if we do give in to the temptation and it takes us into a place where we live in the guilt of it or the shame of it, we can confess our sin to God. He's faithful and just to cleanse us instantaneously. And there's nothing, we teach this, and Pastor says, there's nothing that humility can't fix. there's nothing that, I mean, why are we talking about this tonight? I don't know. God, I need it. I need to hear this over and over again. You know, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom comes. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive others trespass against us. And in the Greek says, deliver me from evil so I won't be tempted. That's what it says. It doesn't say, lead us not into temptation and deliver me from evil. Jesus said, deliver me from evil so I won't be tempted. I like that, don't you? That's the original. Mm-hmm. What a difference. Deliver me from evil that I won't be tempted. So I won't be tempted. I like that. So study your weakness for a moment. And don't be around the people that cause you to live like a jerk. It happens. It's like one of my sons goes to a secular university, and he said, Dad, I'm coming home on weekends because it's hell here during the week. It's a party school. And it's drugs and alcohol. They have women and men students living in the same rooms, same dorms. Hello? What? It's, yeah. I mean, and then they have a queer dorm, they call it. It's all gay. And if you're gay, you can sign up to live in the queer dorm. That's wicked. But I have a couple of recovering homosexuals in my church. And one guy, he calls me. I mean, he's as born again as we are. And actually, he's a graduate of Bible college. And one night he called me. He got caught in a gay bar by an undercover cop. And you would think he would stop right then. He was soliciting a cop, a male cop, in a gay bar in New York State. And he called me and he said, Pastor, I can't even show my face in church anymore. I'm so embarrassed. I said, you've been doing it. You got caught. Thank God you got caught. Now it's over. Can it be over? You got caught. What else do you need to, you know? But men, it's so powerful, an urge or a drive. It's sin. It's not because he was born that way. It's because he made a decision in his will to be independent of God and dependent upon his own flesh and his desires. You know, make a declaration by saying, this trial, this being caught is going to bring me to a place where I can now be free from that so I can be independent to serve God with gladness and joy, and not be robbed of them. Because, have you noticed this, that if you don't pass this test, it will come again in some other way? If you've been around long enough, you know that. You'll get it again, believe me. Because God is patient and God is faithful. Amen. And no, he won't give you anything more than you can handle. But let me read that in Phillips in closing, because that's a good one. 1 Corinthians 10:13, you can read the English, and I'll read his. 10:13, right?
Yes. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it.
And also in 1 Peter 1:5-6, he uses, you don't have to read it, but I was thinking in 1 Corinthians and 1 Peter and in James 1, we have that doctrine of temptation, how to be delivered. But here in, here's what he says. He doesn't go chapter and verse, so it's hard to read. 1 Corinthians 10:13. Oh, here it is, okay. No temptation has come your way that is too hard for the flesh and blood to bear. But God can be trusted not to allow you to suffer any temptation beyond your powers of endurance. He will see to it that every temptation has a way out, so that it will never be impossible for you to bear it. I like that better. It will never be impossible. That's never is negative. He didn't say it will be possible for you to bear it. He said it will never be impossible for you to bear it. You notice the difference? Let's try it again. Mm-hmm. He didn't say it will be possible to bear, because that would leave you off the hook. I mean, it would kind of put the responsibility on you to bear it. Mm-hmm. But he says it will never be impossible for you to bear it. It means it's like Jesus said, watch and pray that you not enter into temptation. Watching is so you're aware that you have to be on guard, shamar. It's guarding your heart, guarding your life, you know, guarding your soul because the devil is around. And praying is that you know you need God to do it because you can't do it. I can't stop lying. It's in my old nature. But the cross, as a dead man, I'm not alive anymore. I refuse to have the identity of my past skills that only promoted the devil and my own flesh. I don't want them. I don't need them. I, living in the image, in a poor self-image even, is a lie to who you are in Christ. You know, the real replacement theology is not the church replacing Israel. It's the new man replacing the old man. Because replacement theology is very big in America today. It's a movement where some jackasses of ministers say that the church has replaced Israel. And so Israel has no relevance to the church today. Or, you know, I talked to guys and I said, you believe that? Why can I take your Bible and rip out most of the pages then? it's like crazy, isn't it? And then they use these verses that you found that there? Wow, how deceived it is. But that's what I think of, one other thing about temptation is sometimes when we think of, you know, our total depravity in a moment, I thought of the law of gravity. Something Pastor said today. The law of gravity is not only a natural law, but it's a spiritual law as well. How is the law of gravity a spiritual law? It's easier for a man to look down than to look up. It's easier for a man to sin than to make a decision to do something righteous. It is. It really is. I mean, God forbid, guard my heart. It would, I know I've watched and pastors watch over the years, we see people who you swear you could bet on that they would be faithful to their wives, to their God, for the rest of their lives. And you watch what happens. Men who get offended easily. If anything can offend you, then that test has to continue until you are at the place where nothing will offend you. And I'm not saying this because I'm trying to boast in me, but this happened to me. And this, for me, it was one of the defining moments of my Christian walk. We were in Prague, the Czech Republic, and there was a conference. It was in 1986 or 87. And Pastor called me over and he said, come here. He said, I'm going to do something that I look me in the eye and say, you're not leaving the ministry no matter what. He said, Pastor, I'm not leaving the ministry no matter what. He said, okay, give me a few moments. So there's a rap with a bunch of people. And he said, Pastor Stambowski, put your chair in the middle of the rap. And so he put my chair and I sat in it. And he starts naming off the things I'm doing wrong as a pastor. One by one. He nailed every one. And I'm sitting there, my wife's looking over there saying, huh? How did he know? I mean, he said named six or seven things I was doing absolutely wrong. He was right on. And the guys around me, I'll never forget the look of them. They were saying, we knew it all along. We knew it. Mistaken rotten Jew. We knew you were just like that. And I'm sitting there, I'm red. This happened to me. And at the end, Pastor came up to me and we spent like 3 hours in the hotel room with him and Barbara, Karen and I. And he said, I had to do that because those men were guilty of those things and more. And I knew I could count on, you know, the humility that you wouldn't be offended by what I was doing. And so I'm not subjective, but I still think about that. I couldn't do that to anyone in my church. You know, a man who's not offended could be a trusted and valuable soldier. And I like that. I look for that in men. That if I could say something, I don't have the liberty to just insult someone. I'm not talking about that. That's not, offenses will come. But great peace have they who love the law and nothing will what? Offend them. Yeah. What does that mean? Something? Nothing will offend you. If somebody insults you, are you offended? If somebody calls my wife a lesbian, is that going to offend me? I mean, come on. You can do better than that, devil. God's going to use this for his glory. Ha, ha, ha. Try something else. Call me something. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Did you say that as kids?
No.
That's what we used to say as kids. Because when people would throw stones at us and stick. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Man, 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 man. So it would stop the, hopefully stop the throwing of sticks or the name calling, whichever came first.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a good thing, and it is a lifelong lesson. Don't be offended, because if you are, it's usually in the area that you have not successfully gone through a trial or temptation. You know. How come we couldn't rid these guys of these demons? And Jesus said, such comes out only with prayer and fasting. Right? Such only comes out with prayer and fasting. You guys aren't there yet. Don't be offended. You know. And I find that God will use other people to reveal just not as a spiritual barometer in a sense, but in the sense of looking at the reasoning for the temptation that you've either succeeded at or failed at. Mm. So he could bring it back or remind you of it or bring you to your knees or bring you to a place where you could say, ah, yes, God, I get it. Because the end of Job's life was better than the beginning, and he kept the wife. Mm. He lost the kids, lost the fortune, lost everything. But he was blessed beyond measure. Interesting. That trial. Six civil and six religious trials. And Jesus had how many trials? You know. And his life of ministry was a life that included temptation. That's why the Lord's Prayer, which I know it isn't the Lord's Prayer, but if the Catholics say it's the Lord's Prayer, it's the Lord's Prayer. It's fine. The Lord said it, so it's his prayer. I've watched right-wing fundamental Baptists destroy the capacity of Catholics in ministry by saying, the Lord's Prayer is John 17. Knock it off. John 15. That's the Lord's Prayer. What are you talking about, this Luke stuff? Our Father which art in heaven. What's wrong with that prayer? Huh? You know. But deliver me from evil that I may not be tempted. But when I am tempted, deliver me as well. Show me the way of escape. Show me that it will never be impossible for me to bear it. It will never be impossible. The English is very tricky and very, very subtle, but very good. Like the devil is subtle and crafty. Two Hebrew words he describes as the serpent. Crafty and subtle. And you think the old man is like that? You bet. And the old man in you surfaces quicker than you think when you think you're going to have enough strength to deal with the temptation that God gives you. Because people are saved, once they're saved, they're always saved, and they will live with their, quote, apparent weaknesses or seeming sins their whole lives if they don't have victory over these things by positive confession, drawing near, resisting, being broken and contrite. Otherwise, they're going to go through things that, you know, will this man ever stop smoking? Yeah. Yeah, he will. He will, because I know God's faithful. And because one day he's going to realize, and you would think a man would stop smoking once he sees his daughter pick up cigarettes. She learned it from him. You'd think that.
Yeah.
I'm talking Christians now. I'm talking about born-again Christians. You think a man would put down, I know this to be true too, a porn site that he's watching in his room when his family is in the next room watching TV. You think a Christian man would put that away? So, how do you know he's saved? I don't even have to go there. I don't care. I know he's saved because he's miserable. That's how I know he's saved. You know that. That's real. And that's a big issue. It's a very big issue. How we deal with that and how we understand the that God is patient, God is long-suffering, and he will mature you and he will prove you through the temptation, through the trial. And what the devil means to curse, God's going to bless because that's his business. And he wants to use you to make a laughingstock on his devil. And the devil really doesn't care so much about us as he does about our testimony. You know, to be carnally minded is death. To be spiritually minded is life and peace. And the only thing that can dethrone self from your own throne is the finished work of Christ. It's the only thing that can. You have to abdicate the throne. By the way, nobody here is Swiss, correct? You're not Swiss, right?
No.
So you're not neutral. This is warfare.
Sweden is
too. Oh my God. So you're neutral. So you can't be neutral in temptation, in warfare, can you? To endure hardness as a soldier is not neutrality. Sorry. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, my wife's family are Mennonites and they're pacifists. They don't serve in war, but they'll serve people in war. I respect that. I used to not. I used to think it was cowardly until I thought about it and talked to my father-in-law. You know what made me change my mind? Because I would kind of like early on say, pacifist, you guys defend your country. What's wrong with you? But my father-in-law said to me, one day he said, when I was your age, I got a call to be a pastor. And I couldn't do it because I was in the Masons. You know the Masons?
Freemasonry.
Yeah, Freemasonry. And I went to the pastor of the church, of our church, and this is a Mennonite guy. This was like scandalous. And he said, those men are my friends, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And the pastor said, you're going to be the next pastor of this church. You either give that up or pastor the church, or you won't pastor the church. And he said, I'm not giving it up because they're my friends. He didn't care about the masonry or whatever. And a couple of years later, he gave it up anyways, but he didn't become a pastor. He said, when Karen met you and I knew you were a pastor, he said, I want to do everything I can to do everything I can to help you in your call because you're doing what I was supposed to do, and I thank you for doing that. Mm. And he said to me this. That's not the end. The end is, that's what pacifist is. I said, what? Well, he said that I would be able to help you, and you can go out and fight the battle. Mm. Very interesting. That because I still have the joy of knowing that it's being fulfilled in my family through your ministry. I like that. It doesn't mean a lot in the sense of anything but the application we're saying today about warfare. You can't be neutral in Christianity. You can't. You can be in your country. Enjoy it. But there is a military or a military campaign against the believer. It's strategy, and it's real. And grab a hold of your convictions. And it may be old-fashioned to live by some convictions, but live by them. They're worth defending. And they're worth living by. Pastor Stevens said, I'll never go to a Hollywood movie. But he had a TV, and he said he had a TV, and he watched movies and TV in his house. Is that hypocrisy? No. He just wouldn't pay money on the outside. It's kind of like when I go to a hotel that's owned by Mormons. What kind of convictions do you have? You know? I mean, it's kind of like that, right? Like, I wouldn't go to a movie until one day, I don't go, rarely I go, but one day my daughter asked me to go. And I thought it was more important to go to a movie with her, and then I could help her explain what was going on in the movie if there was something bad happening, you know, some facts or whatever in the movie. And like about 4 minutes into the movie, I was sound asleep. And Ava said, Dad, you were no fun. You're sleeping the whole movie. I said, was it good? She said, oh, man, it was tremendous. So, yeah, it was like, you know, something silly. But it's okay to be able to insulate your kids with the right doctrine, but not isolate them from the world. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes they can have a temptation or a trial that's allowed by God, ordained by God, to promote Christ in their lives through something they're struggling with, right? That's why you can't condemn anyone, because there is no condemnation before, during, or after your trial. None. Mm-hmm. And you just have to, you know, as the last quote of the Great Britons, keep calm and carry on. Right? Yeah. Isn't that what it says on the cup of tea? Isn't that what they said? Didn't you ever see that tea? And Princess, Diane said that? Keep calm and carry on. That's a famous motto. In English. Oh, you kidding? It's on every teacup all over the airport.
It's been a way to
Yeah, keep calm and carry on. You can Google it. You'll see the whole history behind it. Stay calm and carry on. Yeah, that was like the royals' motto. You know, Princess Di and who are the other ones? Who are the kids today? William and Charles? Well, Charles is the dad. William and Harry, right? Yeah, and their families. So, the doctrine of temptation. And you can look through, the Bible is so wonderful to give us real examples of real people who are really tempted, who were really tempted. Failed and succeeded, succeeded, then failed, failed a zillion times, then succeeded. And I like that. Because the end of the matter is better than the beginning of the matter. And it's,
What did you say? Living sacrifice, alive but dead.
Present your body as a living sacrifice. That's like a lot of people have their own lines in the sand that they won't cross in their Christian experience. So God, instead of testing them, will move on to someone else and he'll give them the quail. You know what I'm saying? We're not, he'll give, quail is the birds and the meat. He'll give them the meat. Like the Jews, they failed. They were angry at Moses and God, and he said, oh, we wish we were in Egypt where we had good stuff to eat. You know, leeks and cucumber and garlic. And so God gave them quail, but leanness in their souls. Right? Quail. But leanness in their souls. Was that Psalm 105 or 105 or 106? He gave them leanness in their souls. What's a lean soul? A lean soul is there's no room in there to be tempted. There's no provision for temptation. Soul, five parts. The mind, the emotions, the conscience, the self-consciousness, and the volition. Each one of the five parts of your soul will have specific temptation. I'll give you a good one. Your conscience is always tempted. Because how do you live with what you know to be true? It's always a temptation without being insane. It is. Do you ask yourself, is this glorifying God? That's your conscience. That's not the outward man. That's not your emotions. Your emotions don't care. If it tastes good, I'll eat 20 plates of that. Even though it's gluttony or whatever, but I don't care. But my conscience will say, is this glorifying God? That's like the agent that God had to put in the soul of Adam and Eve when they sinned. I wonder when he made them in his image perfect, they did have a conscience, but they were only aware of him. They didn't have a sin nature. So when they sinned, and I think God allowed, I mean, this is just speculation, but God allowed the devil to become a doctor to surgically implant the sin nature in Adam and Eve. I just think about that on some weird nights on that when I can't sleep. Like, where did this old sin nature come from? If we were made in God's, you know. And then if you think of a baby being born speaking lies, hello? Are we out of battery? We're out of battery, sorry, end of message. If you heard the story. But if you think of a baby comes forth from its mother's womb speaking lies, what is that? What is that?